right, welcome back to the Groups Matter podcast, episode 41. I'm Brian Daniel with co-host Chris Surratt. Chris, welcome to springtime.
I love it. I don't like the allergies, but I love the warmth.
Well, you know, they call this the Nashville Basin for a reason.
Yeah, you know, it's not as bad as when I first moved here. When I first moved to Nashville, I sneezed for 4 months straight. It was just incredible.
Well, we didn't know my youngest daughter had allergies till we moved here. And she was in and out because of a quote-unquote cold, and then finally it was diagnosed as allergies. But that's just part of it. I'm happy to see daylight savings. Is daylight savings, has it returned, or has it been?
We are now in daylight savings, correct? You know what? It's so funny.
I don't know.
I like it.
I do too. I would rather have daylight in the afternoon than in the morning, because in the morning I'm just in a rush to get out of there 5 out of every 7 days.
I'm in a gym. I don't care if it's sunny outside. Exactly.
So we have what I think is a pretty good show today. Actually, great. I shouldn't use the word good. We have Jeremiah Johnston is going to be calling in here in just a few minutes. And Jeremiah, I don't think you've met him, but he's one of our authors. He is a professor at Houston Baptist University.
Go Houston.
But he is the founder of the Christian Thinker Society. And one of the things Jeremiah does is tour with the Christian Thinker Society, in addition to being the professor at HBU and an author, one of our authors here. He wrote the study Unanswered.
What I'd like to know from Jeremiah first is, can you be a Christian and a thinker?
Let's ask him, because I think that's one of his hot buttons.
Okay.
So he's going to be calling here in just a minute. And I think the reason I think this will be helpful, because one of the things that Jeremiah, in fact, our Bible study Unanswered, is based on the 6 questions that Jeremiah is asked the most. And it's questions about, when is God silent? Pain and suffering, mental illness, suicide.
The big ones.
The big ones, right. So we think, Chris and I, as leaders, as small group leaders, people in Christian education, it's good to know what your people are wrestling with, maybe what their concerns are, maybe even fears. And Jeremiah has, he actually studied at Oxford, by the way.
Wow.
Jeremiah is one of those guys that we think can help us understand how best to respond to some of those questions and maybe give us some tools there. So excited to have him on the show.
And I'm pretty sure he's probably a lot smarter than I am. I don't know about you, Brian. I mean, you're a smart dude, but Oxford, thinkers, but he sounds like he's a pretty smart guy.
But you're the guy with the daughter with the perfect ACT score, so let's just keep it real. Let's keep it real. So, but before we did that, though, I had a couple of posts from Eric Geiger, recent guest on the show, ericgeiger.com. I hope all of you guys are checking that out, because Eric posts really good content both on the blog and on Facebook Live on burnout. He's got specifically 2 posts, 4 warning signs that you're about to burn out, and then 4 practical ways to avoid burnout. So, Chris, I wanted to start just by asking you, burnout, is it legitimate, or is it something that maybe isn't so much and you're really just tired?
I think it's very legitimate, but I think also sometimes it's hard to tell whether you're just tired and you need, you know, a day off or a week off, or are you actually burned out? And so I think that's what's really helpful about this post is Eric gives some practical things that you can look for when you're feeling burned out, when you're not just tired, you don't just need another day off, but if you're not careful, you're going to start making some life-altering mistakes because you're burned out and you're making bad decisions.
So these practical ways or practical warning signs, I'm sorry, that you're maybe approaching burnout: frustration with people, difficulty focusing, physical signs, and feeling exhausted.
Brian, start the sentence over.
So Eric points out the 4 warning signs as frustration with people, difficulty focusing, physical signs, and feeling exhausted. This feels a little bit progressive to me.
Yeah, I think that it creeps up on you. You know, you think that you may just kind of know that you're burning out, but you start kind of feeling these different steps that Eric listed out, and all of a sudden you're burned out and you didn't even realize it was happening. And I think especially for group leaders, particularly that first one, that frustration with people, because, you know, obviously we are dealing with people and there's some messy lives that are in our groups. At least there should be. If you're not dealing with some messy people, you may have to, you know, go out and find some messy people for your group. But, you know, then you find yourself just getting frustrated with them. And when you used to have time for them, you just don't have time for them anymore. And then all of a sudden you have difficulty focusing a little bit at your job or on your family life. And then all of a sudden you start feeling some physical signs like the random eye twitches, which I know I get when I'm under a lot of stress. I definitely get those. And then you start feeling exhausted. And before you know it, you're burned out and you're not wanting to do what you were able to do before.
And Chris, like you, I've been on both sides of this. I've been on the leadership side, but also been a volunteer. So these are things as a leader to look for in people. One of my mentors taught me to think the best of people. And if you do that, I think that makes it easier to detect underlying realities like burnout. It's not just someone, for instance, being frustrated with people, being short or rude. It may be something else.
Yeah. One thing I've heard several ministry leaders say is ministry would be great if it wasn't for the people. Well, that's a problem, because what we're called to do is to minister and equip people. And so if you start kind of feeling that, and it's not just a joke, then it's probably time to take some steps toward getting out of that burnout.
Okay. So Eric also gives us four practical ways to avoid burnout. So these are some practices that you can put in place not to get to that place that we just described. And so the four ways that you can avoid burnout: listen to your body, exercise — that sounds a lot like work — spend quality time with people who love you, in other words, invest in meaningful relationships, learn the rhythms of your work. And one that I would add that Eric didn't include is give yourself a social media or digital or screen break or fast.
Yeah, and that's hard to do. You know, I know when I go on vacation, I'm hardly away from the screen of my phone or my computer or what's pulling at me. And so I think that's a huge one for people to do. But, you know, honestly, a big one for me is that second one, which is exercise. The times of my life that I have felt really burned out, the most stressed, not in control of what I was doing, is when I'm not taking care of my body and I'm not exercising, because it really matters. And so, you know, about a year and a half ago, I decided to get back into it. And every morning at 5:30 comes in, and every morning I go, I don't want to do this, but it sets the day off the right way and it helps me feel better.
So one of the things that's not going to solve any burnout issues is watching more TV, which you could lump into screen time. But I don't know how many of you out there like watch football on Saturdays or Sundays, but on those days, and I don't do it that much anymore, but there was a time when I thought relaxing, unplugging — some people call it cave time, we just spend hours watching television, whether it's movies or football — I would end the day just exhausted. So I think that's another thing that we need to keep in mind when we're talking about social media. Really, it's screen. Because what you don't realize, the level of concentration that it takes, and I think things like exercise and quality time with people in relationship, I think they are antithetical to just sitting still and looking at a screen for hours at a time.
Yeah, I just read a great book on how to get better sleep. And one of the things in it, we talked about the blue light that comes out of TVs and computer screens and your phone. And it's awful for your sleep rhythms. And he just suggested turning it off early or even getting glasses that keep the glare down. But just all of that, whether we realize it or not, is causing our body to get tired.
All these things really important to group leaders and church leadership, because as we all know, and frankly, a lot of jobs are like this, and if you're volunteering, then it's just more on top of the busyness. It's difficult to unplug a lot of times. And so these are some things that you can put in place just for a healthier life and to avoid. No one wants to get there, because Chris, my experience is it's really tough to pull back, you know, once you get there.
It is.
So the fourth one here, learn the rhythms of your work, I thought was interesting. So Eric puts it this way. Every role has seasons that are more intense than others. Learn these as quickly as possible and schedule your life around them. Slower seasons are often the best time to take vacation time and more days off. Take advantage of the slower seasons so you are more prepared for the challenging ones. So you think most roles now work like that, seasons?
I think it's easy to start blending the seasons. I know when I was on staff at a fast-growing large church, we always talked about, okay, this is our season of really all in. You know, we're going to put this in. And before we knew it, it was always the season of all in. And so I think as leaders, especially if you're a church leader, you need to build in those breaks for people. Because if you're not careful, there suddenly the downtime goes away. And the season that used to be maybe a little bit slower start to pick up, because if you know your church is growing, you're always looking at the next season, you're never taking a breath. And so, you know, just to take care of your staff, you've got to start building in those slower times or giving them permission to take a step back for a season.
That's good insight. Again, that's ericgeiger.com, G-E-I-G-E-R. If you're not following Eric, do yourself a favor and find him on Twitter and Facebook, and check out his blog from time to time. It's always very relevant. So let's see if we can get Jeremiah on the phone. Chris, you ready?
Let's go.
All right, we've got Jeremiah Johnston on the line, author of Unanswered, and a good friend. Welcome to the Groups Matter podcast, Jeremiah.
Great to be with you, Brian. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I know you're busy, and I appreciate you taking some time out of your schedule. You and Chris, you guys just jet all over the place all the time, it seems like. I don't know how you manage.
It's been a little bit of a Chinese fire drill, to say the least, but we're having fun. God's good, and you throw triplets in the mix of all that, it gets really interesting sometimes.
Well, it's just you and me today, Chris. My co-host had to step out to catch a plane, speaking of which. So, hey, let's just get started. I sent you a copy of the questions, so let's just run through these. So I think in addition to being an expert in your field, and you've studied at Oxford, you're currently on staff at Houston Baptist, you're founder and president of the Christian Thinker Society. I think on the group side of things, where this, I think, has import and relevance is that you are keenly aware and sensitive to what people maybe are really thinking, the questions that they're really asking, and maybe even their fears. So I think our listeners are going to be interested in all these things that you have to say. But let's begin just telling us a little bit about the Christian Thinker Society, like, you know, the history of CTS, your mission, and your role within the organization.
Well, thanks so much for the great questions, Brian. Christian Thinker Society, our mission is to inspire all Christians, not just a few Delta Force Bible study teachers in our church or pastors, but all Christians to become thinkers and thinkers to become Christian. I'm now a contributor for Fox News, and the thing they told me, Brian, when I started writing for them is whatever you do, don't read the comments of your articles, which is interesting because I get railed on every time I write articles for Fox News. If you take the time to look at the comments, someone will say, a Christian thinker, isn't that an oxymoron?
I bet.
And unfortunately, that is the times in which we live. We have the most educated followers of Jesus of all time that we have the privilege to minister to. And what I mean by that is by both degrees and self-taught, self-educated individuals. And yet we have the most biblically illiterate, the most ill-prepared to even have the most basic pedestrian questions in conversations, faith conversations, not arguments about their faith. And so our ministry is really dedicated to filling that gap. We are a church-centric ministry, and so we come alongside of churches. We exist really in five areas, live events. So we'll talk a little bit later about the tour that we're doing in mega churches across the country and conferences. We have extensive publishing menu. We want people to be resourced. They're going to forget 88% of what I say, Brian, after I speak in a church. Media is a huge driver of what we do. So I want to encourage our audience to please like our Christian Thinker Society Facebook, connect with me on Twitter. I want to connect with you because we're constantly putting up clips from different projects that we're doing in the media realm. Education and resourcing pastors. And so we're working on certificate programs, and we're working on really just helping pastors and Bible study leaders have that ability to answer questions. And so, and then finally, just the Unanswered series really ties in beautifully with that. And so it's been a real joy. I mean, no one gave me my ministry, Brian. I mean, I was sitting in Oxford 9 years ago. I had a second century Gospel of John fragment in my hand. And honestly, the Lord spoke to me and said, Jeremiah, you know, the end game of doing this is not to be some ivory tower crusty professor. He said, what I sense the Holy Spirit say to me is, I want you to sit at the intersection of the scholarly and popular world. I want you to make these rich truths in the scripture accessible to everyone with no prerequisites. And so that's really our mission, Brian, at Christian Thinker Society.
You know, it's not something that I've heard discussed often, Jeremiah, but a significant aspect of group life is the question. And so Unanswered, I think, is addressing those six questions that you know, at least at the time that we produced the study, I don't know if that's changed or not, that you were asked the most. So I would encourage, you know, group leaders to take a look at that, because the question and wrestling with the question, particularly as this is set up, is supreme in group life. So you referenced the tour. And I've got to say, it seems like every week I get an email from you saying, hey, we've run out of product again. We've run out of resources again. I've sold this many, I've sold 300 Bible study books, and all my kits are gone. How can you help me? So you're in the middle of what appears to be a relatively extensive tour of senior dates as a part of the Christian Thinker Society. So what are you learning through your interactions and through this experience?
Yeah, thanks. Great question, Brian. You know, I really have to think, this is where, just for our Bible study leaders, I love partnering with Lifeway. I mean, I had no idea, Brian, when we first started talking together and ideating this project, just the legs that God would give it. And I think we all have that sense when you know you're at the center of God's will for your life, because Ephesians 3:20 starts to happen. When I first began this Bible study project, and I think it's important for our friends to know who are listening, you know, we didn't sit in a room and think, you know, how can we come out with a culturally relevant study? I mean, what can we do to make us trendy? We just literally looked at the data. And after receiving 6,000 text messaged questions at live events for the last, I think, previous 5-year period, we were shocked as we aggregated those questions into the most frequently asked. I mean, we could have done more than six, but we wanted to make it accessible for everyone. And so that Bible study gave birth to a book that Lee Strobel did the foreword to. I think it's fascinating that he says his path to atheism was paved with unanswered questions in the foreword to the book. So hopefully we can discuss that a little bit more and drill down. But then finally, really the beautiful bow on all of it has been the beginnings of a church-centric tour, not just in the United States, but across the Canadian provinces. We'll have two events again this year in London. We'll be back in London May 13 in central London with 2,000 pastors. And so we really come alongside in a live event context. And if you were to say, okay, what's the tour bottom line? We have to give people permission to question and doubt their faith. It is not a sin to question and doubt our faith. Nowhere in the scriptures do you read that. Questions are okay as long as answers are sincerely being pursued. And so I think the reason our tour is gaining traction more than anything is we're giving the church permission to discuss things that the church has not felt comfortable to discuss. And we can drill down more into those questions. But we're raising up, it's primarily in mega churches and conferences, although I'll speak at any church, big or small, doesn't matter to me. But as far as the tour goes, it's the ecosystem of the tour is primarily mega churches. I'm delighted that Museum of the Bible has sponsored this tour exclusively. And so it's really neat because I think Museum of the Bible presents the antidote to much of what I'm discussing and the problem, the acute problem of biblical literacy and not being prepared, equipped, or resourced to answer questions. I think Museum of the Bible is a great thing to present as just simply a solution to the problems I'm discussing. And honestly, Brian, I mean, what keeps me going, the reason I'm quite willing to sacrifice time for my family and 5 kids is if I wish I could have you with me, Brian, at the table when I'm autographing books, because I always tell the crowds I will stay here as long as it takes. I want to write the book for that person in your life who has unanswered questions, that person who's turned their back on God or perhaps thinks God's turned his back on them. I mean, I was in Tulsa a few weeks ago and a woman comes up to me and she said, thank you for giving me spiritual closure today. I thought I'd become an agnostic. My faith's been renewed. I was on duty the night my brother, she's a police officer. She said, I was on duty the night my brother took his life. You know, where was God? And you just hear these, I mean, these searing, and I think a lot of our Bible study leaders can identify. I mean, the things people will tell us in a Bible study context when they know we're listening, it's really remarkable. And so I think that's what's cool about how, and if you want to find out more, of course, you can go to christianthinkers.com where we talk more about the tour there.
I think a lot of group leaders, and I can, just from my own experiences, one of the things that, I wouldn't say that it's dread, but one of the things I always go into a group meeting or relationship with at least the slightest bit of concern is that question that I just don't know how to respond to. And so unanswered mm-hmm. is a way that we have collaborated with you to equip group leaders in that way, but not just group leaders, but the group itself. And so, you know, it's the title, Unanswered, Lasting Truth to Trending Questions, I think says it all. Hey, you referenced Museum of the Bible a couple of times. Our listeners may not know what you're talking about. So can you tell us a little bit about just what's going on there and what to expect in the future?
I think it's the most exciting project that's happening right now anywhere in the world. The Green family of Hobby Lobby made a significant seed gift to a new nonprofit called the Museum of the Bible. Steve Green, the president and CEO of Hobby Lobby, is now the chairman of the board of Museum of the Bible. And this, the Green family really, it really began organically, kind of like Unanswered. They started buying up artifacts, Torah scrolls, all kinds of other neat artifacts, extra biblical confirmations that we have from archaeology. And it just gave rise to this vision of where are we going to house all of this. And through a really unique experience of really God's grace and God's leading, they have a $1 billion museum that will open two blocks from the mall, three blocks from the Capitol in Washington, D.C. It's set to open in November 2017. I've been there. I've seen it with my own eyes. It's 430,000 square feet dedicated to celebrating the impact and the narrative of the Bible, as well as just all of the ways the Bible has influenced society. I mean, they have a Bible and fashion floor, which is really cool. We don't realize how much the Bible has impacted fashion. The top level, they have biblical foods. They have Amazing Grace, a Broadway show that's going to be in their theater that has an amazing, changeable environment. And so Christian Thinker Society is really the evangelical link to Museum of the Bible, to local churches. And we're just delighted by this project. And it's going to be, I think it's cool what my friend Tim Smith says, who's on staff with Museum of the Bible. They heard a young man heard the presentation they made about Museum of the Bible, and the young man walked up and said, "You're going to make the Bible cool again." So I think that puts it in perspective really well.
So back on track here. Thanks for giving us a little bit. That's November. That's this November in Washington, D.C.
Correct.
So, Jeremiah, I think a group leader would be interested to know what question people tend to ask most often about their faith and how you respond to that.
Well, that's a great question, Brian. And I mean, when you asked me that, I remember our writers conference where we were kind of going through these questions. And after receiving 6,000 of these, they're really need-based questions. I'm not getting questions on, you know, the swoon theory of resurrection. Our audience may be shocked to realize my number one question that I've received via text message from live audiences, denominations of all different varieties across the spectrum. Number one question relates in some way to suicide, mental health or mental wellness, anxiety, depression, bipolar, any of the associated anxiety, depressive, mental illnesses. That's my number one question. Christians feel so ill-equipped to minister in that issue. The second most frequently asked question is on the silence of God. You know, we hear a pastor say God spoke to him, and yet 80 to 90% of the audience has never personally had that feeling, or it's been a really long time and they feel like God is silent to them. As I'll say this Sunday in our event, you know, there's 7,487 promises from God to man in the scriptures, 1,000 promises in Jeremiah, 1,000 Isaiah, 1,000 in Ezekiel. One Bible scholar actually argued that all 2,461 Psalms, verses in the Psalms are a promise to God, and yet not one of those promise that life is going to be easy. And so we can't equate the problems in our life with the promises we see in Scripture, and we feel like God's silence. The third question I've been asked most is paranormal, that really the new normal. How do we respond? I mean, gosh, according to the Wall Street Journal, there's a Western state school, I won't say the name because somebody might get some ideas, you can get a PhD in zombies today. I mean, can you imagine that? A PhD in zombies. And yeah. So we've kind of gone wild on paranormal, and then we really rounded out with equipping then people. So we take those kind of three difficult need-based questions, and then we move right into the latest evidences for the Bible. And so we have a whole section on the Bible and unanswered where, I mean, I'm really deploying the latest stuff that I've learned in Oxford about manuscripts, scriptures, why we can trust the Bible, why it exhibits verisimilitude with the first century world, and just give people that conversational level of ability to talk about why the Bible is different from any other book. And then, of course, my specialty is the resurrection. Brian, you don't know this, but I just wrote a 9,000-word article, really a chapter for Macmillan Textbooks, which they're not a Christian publisher by any means, on the case for the physical bodily resurrection of Jesus. And I'm delighted that that's included in their philosophy textbook that's going to be used by undergrads all over the country. And what's really cool about that is I really just used a lot of the same stuff with Unanswered, just more at a scholarly level. So we have a whole section on body of proof, evidence for the bodily resurrection of Jesus. And then finally, section 6, it's the number one reason people walk away from the faith, an experience of suffering, evil, or pain. And so we really root the study in 2 Corinthians 1, where Paul says, you know, I have the sentence of death within me, apokrimai in Greek. I don't want to go on living. It's the only place we see that word in the 138,000 words of the Greek New Testament. And he has so much anxiety, he's actually called the Job of the New Testament. People were doubting his apostleship because he had so many problems. If you're really with God, why do you have all these problems? Why do you have all this suffering and pain? And so we anchor the study there to talk about how we can minister through adversity in our life. And so those are the top 6 questions. Like I said, we could have done more, but looking at it now, Brian, we could probably do a Bible study on all 6 of these because they've really struck a chord. And I think that Bible study leaders will really enjoy being resourced and really becoming conversant. Because I think the majority of the questions that Bible study teachers and pastors receive somewhere derive from one of those 6. And so my study is going to equip you to be conversant in those issues, not to have an argument, but to have a really qualified, deep faith discussion.
So since I met a man who had a PhD in rhetoric, a PhD in anything, much less zombie, is not surprising to me. I have to admit. I remember thinking a PhD. How do you get a PhD in rhetoric? So maybe zombie makes even more sense. I don't know. Exactly. Just given what we know about the world today. Hey, so I'm gonna go off script here. A little bit. So yesterday, I don't know, on most phones, I guess all smartphones, or maybe you have to access the app, I don't know, but you get the push notifications and the top stories of the day, right? Uh-huh. And my feeds, it looks like they come, it may be based on some preference I set at one time, so I get from all over. But one of the headlines, and this was one of 3 that hit my phone yesterday, was an alarming rate of what, a new term to me, what was termed deaths of despair. I don't know if you saw that or not, or if you're familiar with it or not. Scan the article. You know, sometimes on your phone you read in varying, you know, with varying intensity and depth. But I saw that for a first world country, the trend that we have in deaths of despair is really surprising. And it was classified as like depression, mental illness, which more and more I think may be too broad, but maybe not.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you had addiction-like or related deaths. And so just reading that article, it was really surprising to me to read that, for one. I mean, we're in Middle Tennessee. It's a bubble, I've got to be honest. So, you know, in my communities, our church and here at Lifeway, and, of course, we get outside that with the kids' sports and stuff. But really, I mean, I just got to be honest. I'm not living in a third world country by any stretch of the imagination. Yet, this article was indicative of where I live, even. These deaths of despair are growing at an alarming trend. So I was left with the question, how is this related to a nation that is becoming, what I would say, at least writ large, less Christian? Or I would say, even if it's not becoming less Christian or evangelical, less devoted in its evangelicalism and its Christianity. Have you seen that headline? And if so, or even if not, how would you respond to this, just given what you're learning on the tour and through your work at HPU and with CTS?
Well, Brian, that is a phenomenal question. I haven't seen the latest. In fact, I've not even heard that term, deaths of despair. I think that's actually, beautifully descriptive for exactly what we're dealing with today. Here's what I think, and I think that your question is so deep at so many levels, it deserves a substantive answer, not a soundbite. And by the way, that's getting on, getting on my soapbox. As Christians, we have to get beyond the soundbite mentality. When we ask a substantive question, we need to be able to sit there in our seats, get our pen out, get our Bible out, pray, and get a substantive answer in return. Brian, you've just asked, is there a correlation between the lack of religiosity, if you will, or the de-Christianization of America and the increase of deaths of despair? And I would say absolutely yes. Any clinical psychiatrist or Christian counselor would agree with that statement without a doubt. Because make no mistake, and I say this jokingly, but also truthfully, CNN is, we're not going to find any hope in CNN. I can say this as a Fox News contributor. We're not going to have any hope in Fox News. As followers of Jesus, let us never forget we are the people who give hope. We are the hope dealers. And so if we have lost course, if we've been blown off course and not been, if we've lost our voice and our ability to speak to the questions of the day, make no mistake, why is unanswered so relevant? And you've just brought up a relevant issue. Jesus Christ ministered in a time of intense suffering and pain. Life expectancy was 20 years of age. 25% of the Roman Empire was sick or dying or in need of immediate medical attention on any given day. No wonder 30 times in the Gospels we hear that large crowds were attracted to him. And so, yes, this is the number one question. I am not surprised at all. And Brian, I've gotten so bold lately because this is such a need. In fact, I'm writing a book right now. We've already signed the deal. It'll come out. It's not the one that's coming out this fall, but it'll come out next year. You don't have to be crazy to have a mental illness is the title, because we have to give the church permission to discuss this issue. In some Christian camps, it's all demons if you're struggling with one of the mental challenges. In other camps, you can never have medicine under any circumstance. There's no such thing as a chemical balance. Both of those extremes are false when we look at the scriptures. When we look at the scriptures, we see that God used people even in their depression. God used people even in their anxiety. God took them through that for a deeper yes in their life. And so I think it's imperative that we get conversant in this issue. I think it's the number one issue affecting Christians. And by the way, I'll quote your own Lifeway research project. 25% of pastors right now, according to Lifeway research, are chronically depressed. And so it's something that I think that when we really get this right, when we get the answer right, we're going to see healing. We're going to see ministry like we're seeing on the CTS tour. We're going to give people closure. We're going to give people answers. We cannot be silent about it anymore. And you can probably hear I could go on and on about this answer, but that's a phenomenal question. I'd love to see the article to answer you.
Yeah, I would encourage anyone just to Google deaths of despair and see what comes up. And so you get the list. It looks like there's a lot of articles that are pointing to this research. And I would say where this is important to group life is we're talking about life and death, not just in the eternal sense, but also in the current physical sense now, and being able to immerse people in the truths of Scripture, and like Jeremiah is saying, to be honest with our questions and to be serious about our questions. I think I was talking with a friend of mine, a coworker actually. It's been a few months now, but we were just lamenting, some of the cultural things that we're seeing, and that's when it hit me. We were just talking through what the ultimate problem is, and I think it can boil down to a culture that lacks or is becoming less able to take on what Jesus called the weightier matters, or I would say just to make it more simple, the serious things of life. I think with so many channels of television, with social media being what it is, and these things aren't bad at all, but with gaming to the extent that it is, a study like Unanswered that takes on these issues, these very complicated issues, head on in an honest way. I think you use the term flippant or soundbite. I would go one step further and say sometimes we lack the ability to be intellectually honest about things.
That's right.
I think in the group life that we espouse here on the show, and that almost, I would say, 100% of churches that we're in relationship with also espouse, to immerse people in this environment is literal life and death. So I appreciate you responding to that, because I know that wasn't on our original list. So lastly, so given your work there at HBU and Christian Thinker Society, you're very much in touch with people across all kinds of demographics, right? I mean, so you've got students on the one end, you're in the churches on the other. On the other hand, you've got your gig at Fox, where you're a consultant that comes in and those interactions. So just given, and you hit on it a little bit already, but I would be interested in knowing what you would say is the most alarming cultural trend today.
Yeah, this is you're going to think I could have scripted the BBC, but I didn't, I promise you. We're filming last summer with John Lennox as part of our tour there in England. And John Lennox, for anyone in our audience who may not know, he's a mathematician at Oxford. He's a sold-out believer. You can see him. He's also what we would call an apologist. He's a defender of the Christian faith. We're interviewing him, and this is why I'd encourage our people to like, our listeners to like my Christian Thinker Society public page, because we have this clip up there. It's something that I think everyone needs to see, because you've asked me what's the most alarming trend. We sit down with John Lennox, and we say, Professor Lennox, why are so many Britons leaving the church? The UK, depending on which study you read, it's either 5% or less than 2.6%. Christian, meaning that 98% of Britons will not attend church this coming Sunday. Professor Lennox, why is this trend? And he said, let me quote to you a survey that was done by the British Broadcasting Corporation. The BBC surveyed an extensive, and you can Google this survey, extensive research on why the church had become so irrelevant. Do you know what the number one answer was, Brian? When the church was surveyed, and this is why it's so important we look at this, because in many ways, the U.S. follows the U.K. spiritually. The number one answer, why are people leaving the church? Quote, the church will not answer my unanswered questions. The church will not answer my unanswered questions. In the clip where we interview him, Lennox goes on to say that we have lost the spirit of the early apologists, if you will. The early apologists, when you look at Justin Martyr, when you go through the list of the second and third century, you know, I just think of all of them. I mean, these people that were Tertullian, others that were great defenders of the faith, they're writing letters to the emperor about why Christians make the best citizens. They essentially outthought everyone around them. And we've lost that spirit. And instead, we're raising up children and spiritual children who have a really squishy faith. And so they go off to a state school, and that nihilist professor who believes in nothing goes poof, and they're not on solid foundation. I'm a huge backer of public schools. I went to public school my whole life, as did my wife Audrey, but at the same time I was prepared. I had parents that prepared me for those moments. And so I think that is the most alarming trend. The church is, I mean, altogether ignoring the questions that are seeping in, and then therefore ignoring the people that are left in the wake of those questions. We all can think of someone who is turned away from the faith because they're in the quicksand of an unanswered question. And so that's without a doubt the most alarming trend to me, because I get to see the solution on the other side. I get to see what happens in these live event contexts, especially. Last Friday night, speaking to 9,000 men in Virginia, there wasn't a dry eye in the house. We all need to get permission to get our masks off and say, hey, I'm struggling through these questions. You mean to tell me that God will allow me to bring my feeble faith, a faith that's very similar to the Father in Mark chapter 9, 20, 22 to 24, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. I can bring that kind of faith to the Savior, and he will still love me. He won't judge me. And it'll guide me through that question to an answer. You better believe it. That's the kind of God we serve. And those are the kind of groups that I think that's the kind of environment we want to have as a group. And guess what? It's okay sometimes to say, I don't know the answer. That's such a great question. Let's investigate it together. And so, Brian, for all of our audience tonight, I just want you to know that how I thank God for you being a key architect. I mean, I have whiteboard session pictures when we really prayed through this study. And I don't think we had any idea back then how the Holy Spirit would take, you know, our words and shape them in a way that's impacting people, you know, far and wide. And so I just appreciate so much your faith in this study, because it really took a step of faith for a publisher to want to discuss these issues. So thank you for trusting in me. Thanks for partnering with our ministry. And I just look forward to all we're going to do together in the future, too.
Well, I appreciate that, Jeremiah. So you can find out more about the Christian Thinker Society at christianthinkers.com. I would also encourage you to check out Jeremiah's Twitter and Instagram. And I have underscore Jeremiah J, common spelling. That's correct, right?
Yep, that's right. Exactly.
I'd like to thank our sponsor, Unanswered, Lasting Truth to Trending Questions. You can find out more about that study at lifeway.com/unanswered. And once again, Jeremiah, thanks for being with us. And let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely. I've enjoyed it, Brian. Thanks again.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Groups Matter podcast. Appreciate everyone being with us and hope to see you again soon.